Over 7 million different animals inhabit our planet.
Yeah, so today, harpy eagle.
I know, and man, this is going to be awesome. I have to admit, I was...
What can they teach us?
In this scientific journal, it was describing blow by blow, like, I don't know, a Stephen King, or I don't read...
Many species are in crisis and need your help.
Estimates that there are less than 50,000 individuals.
I know.
And
it makes
so...
me think of...
Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.
Welcome to the All Creatures Podcast. This is Chris, and today, drum roll, please, I want to introduce Dr. Atkin Mio. Yay!
Oh, Chris, stop it. Thank you. Yay. No. Seriously, you do not have to call me Dr. Atkin. All right. You can call me Dr. Angie.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, whatever, Dr. Angie. So I'm joined today by the new Dr. Angie, who rose from the ashes like the phoenix. We were just talking about that a little bit. Yeah.
I survived.
Yep. Yeah, no, we're really proud of you, Dr. Angie. And this is our first episode after whale sharks that you have finished and defended and did an awesome job.
Thank you. It wasn't always pretty, but it's done, and it's a huge accomplishment, and I can finally breathe again.
I know. Now the fun really begins, because expectations for you are super high.
Well, I think our listeners will be able to tell from this podcast on, it's going to be pure genius that I'm spewing.
Yeah. All of a sudden, right. It does. All of a sudden, you just survived the marathon, right?
No,
it's been really great. You've done really awesome. I just want to say to the listeners out there and to Angie, for you women that are holding down jobs and having children and raising a family, like, bravo. It just, from my perspective as, you know, being Angie's previous advisor, but watching Angie, you know, through two pregnancies, do all this studying, all of this research, raising her two children. I mean, bravo to John, too, for all the support he's given you.
Absolutely. Yeah. From busting out of my lab coat when it didn't fit around my big around my big belly. Hilarious. Yeah. But I appreciate that, Chris, but it really takes a village. I mean, people ask me all the time, like, how do you do it all? And the answer is, I don't. I have a lot of people helping me. My wonderful husband, John, he ironed my shirt, for goodness sakes, the morning of my big defense. And all of that, from neighbors helping, to my dear friends, to family, to, you know, just a lot of people letting me either turn my homework in late or bring a kid to class. Right.
So I remember that.
But it's surrounding yourself with the right people. And obviously I found that at the university. And so, so all you women out there, you can do it. It's awesome. It definitely can be done. And then you get to, and, you know, I always say, as far as education goes, it's something that nobody can take it away from you. Right? Your house could be taken away from you, your car, your job, but nobody can take away your education. And so upward and onward, man, here we go.
Yeah. That's what makes this podcast so exciting, because it's just, we're so education focused and knowledge, you know, you can't take away knowledge, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So today, harpy eagle.
I know. And man, this is going to be awesome. I have to admit, I was physically and mentally exhausted this week. And so I was a little dreading or a little lazy in prepping for the harpy eagle. And then, to pardon the pun, I dug my talons right in and was just so excited to do this bird of prey, because it is very majestic. It's the harpy eagle is one of the largest raptors in the world. And I just basically started looking at pictures in it, and my spirits perked right up, and I was ready to dive right in and learn everything I could about the harpy eagle so I can share it with everybody. And
I know. For two geeks, you know, now we're official. Dr. Angie is officially a geek now, like super geek. Yeah. We were so geeky about animals. It is really fun. Like, you know, we said in the last pod, to have to learn something and force ourselves, you know, in our busy lives. But yeah, it's, they're huge, live in the rainforest, and our first bird of prey, right?
Yes. So, yes. Mm-hmm. Which is exciting. I've been yanking your chain to do this bird for a long time. So
Right. Yeah, you have. Yeah. And you want to stay tuned because at the end, I'm going to tell you just how powerful their talons are. It's pretty, pretty impressive.
Yes. No, stay tuned for that. It was one of the things that might give me nightmares for a while.
Yeah, I know. Like, look up all the time, because if that thing was bearing down on me, I'd probably die of a heart attack. So, yeah, like, largest eagle in the world. Angie, what really strikes me about these birds, and people need to really look at them, you know, look at our show notes, or, you know, just look at harpy eagle on the internet.
Yes, please Google a picture of a harpy eagle first and foremost. We're going to do a job describing it, but I can already hypothesize that we're not going to do it anywhere near the justice. It's so cool looking. It's gorgeous.
The one thing that struck me the most is their unique headdress of feathers.
Yes.
And it really made me think of, you know, Native Americans in North America, that not the, you know, thousand feather headdress, but just, you know, some of the warriors, that the braves that had just a few feathers sticking up. That's kind of how I would describe it.
Yes. You know, yeah. They have like two to three feathers sticking up.
Yeah. Yeah. Just really, I was like, wow, that's the one thing that really stuck out with me with them. Their heads are gray, and their neck, so going down. And then it's almost like an overcoat, you know, dark across the chest and over the shoulders and wings. You know, so it's almost like a cape is how I would describe the dark. And then they have this just really white mottled chest or white feathers of the chest and underneath the wings.
Yeah, and there's a little gray interspersed in there too, but a little flecks of gray.
Yeah. So that's probably the best description I could give, you know, without people not knowing what they look like.
Sure. And I think the other thing too that we should probably jump right into, the three or four feathers sticking up from the back of their heads, almost like a Native American headdress or something, that just are really striking. But other than that, their size is what knocked my socks off.
Yeah, they're huge.
I found a photo, more of a historic photo, probably from the 50s or 60s, and lining it up next to a human with the wingspan. Unfortunately, it was a bird that had been hunted. And we're going to touch on some of that, of course, towards the end of the podcast. But the size was just, in the wingspan for me, was just incredible.
It is huge. It's up over 7 feet or 2.2 meters. Like, they're up there.
That's a basketball player, right?
Shaq. Shaquille O'Neal or whatever. Like huge. They're only bested, I think, by the condors, right? So the condors have like almost a 10 feet wingspan. You know, almost 3 meters. As far as the eagles. And then what's also crazy, Angie, is they have these really strong beaks that's hooked, but their talons can be up to 4 inches long, or as long as a grizzly bear.
I know!
The one animal, and I don't think I've mentioned this in one of the pods yet, that I was nervous at the zoo, you know, when I was following Ashley around, was the grizzly bear, because I was 3 feet on the other side of really, you know, strong enclosure. But I looked at those their claws, and I was like, oh my God, they were huge.
Yes.
So 4 inches, that is big.
That is long. That is very long. I found one of these dated photos too, had a large man, and the claw was wrapped around the guy's arm. I think to show the size of it. And it's very impressive. And that's why I think, obviously, with most people, when they work with these birds of prey, they're going to have a big leather glove on.
Yes. Very thick leather glove.
Very, very thick leather glove. Yes. And are very well trained too, of course, to be able to handle these birds.
Yeah. And I've got a really good, cool photo, and I'll try to remember to put this on the show notes, of the harpy eagle claw. You know, it's almost like twice the size of the golden eagle, which is still very impressive. And then it's like the bald eagle is, again, a little bit, a third or half the size. of the harpy eagle talon. So just really incredible animals that live their habitat Central and South America. And actually portions of mm-hmm. Southern Mexico still. So
sure.
Yeah.
They have a pretty large range. They can weigh up to 16 pounds or 7 kilograms,
right.
Which is for a bird is a lot.
Yeah.
A flying bird. That's like a Cocker Spaniel or something, or more than that even.
Yeah. And, I mean, okay, so how big was your turkey that you had, you know,
right.
for last Thanksgiving,
yeah.
you know, in the States? It was a few months ago, but a 20-pound turkey is huge, huge. And that bird's mm-hmm. not going to fly, right? They just raise them mm-mm. as meat. But, you know, almost that big, flying around, darting through trees, being very athletic.
And the harpy eagle is flying around these dense jungles of the Amazon, if you can picture it, or at least that helps me mm-hmm. when I'm describing these things. But unlike other raptors of a similar, slightly smaller size, the harpies have a little bit smaller wingspan and a longer tail.
Mm-hmm.
Researchers think that this is probably an adaptation to help them like zoom, like maneuver through dense rainforests,
right.
jungles, tropical rainforests. So just really cool. And they're not really known to fly long distances. Mm-hmm. They prefer going from tree to tree while they search for their prey.
Right.
But just still, I need to see one of these guys in action soaring through the air, because I think it would just be breathtaking.
Right, right. You say sorry because it made me think when you were talking about them flying about the California condor episode, which again, if you haven't mm-hmm. listened to that one, that's a really great one. They're called soarers, right? Because they just fly forever mm-hmm. and they mm-hmm. have these huge wings. They're like an airplane, right? They just fly in the thermals,
yeah.
you know, and just go. Whereas these are darting in and out and, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Quick movement, sudden bursts. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just incredible.
Because they don't have the open land to do that. That's not what they were adapted
right,
for.
Right, right, right. Now, in Central America and Mexico, so they're really on the Gulf side and not so much on the Pacific side. So the few that remain mm-hmm. in like Southern Veracruz down through Mexico, that's kind of where they're isolated. Now, their populations are diminishing in Central America and South America. In South America, mm-hmm. very large range, Colombia, Brazil, small pockets, Argentina. So that's kind of where
Venezuela.
Yeah. Yeah. So kind of there mm-hmm. where it just makes me think of the Amazon River dolphin and how you've traveled the world. Like, I know you didn't see one of these, but geez, I'm so jealous.
I didn't. But I've been to Manaus, which is about as Amazonian as it can get. Mm-hmm. That's in northern Brazil.
Right.
But no, we did not see one. But it makes sense because I was more on the river doing river tours, and I only did one jungle trek, and we weren't out that long, so the chance of me seeing one would probably be pretty small. But
right,
no, it's
right.
Now I have a new life goal, because man, that would be one for the books.
Right.
Like I said, I'm a wannabe bird nerd,
yep.
Birder type person, but that's one that I would put on my book for sure. That's would be amazing. But I think they'd be hard to see though too, because they're pretty
yeah.
They're high up in the trees and pretty camouflaged, and they don't soar really. They don't fly
right.
around. So
right. You'd be pretty lucky to see one.
We need to like hook up with a researcher that knows, you know, their habitat and their range. And as you had mentioned, with their populations in decline and their habitat being fragmented, and therefore their populations being fragmented, there's not large numbers of them.
Mm-mm.
Like there's not colonies Mm-mm. of them, and there's, Mm-mm. you know, they're solitary birds for the most part. So yeah, I think to see them in the wild is probably a little bit more challenging than other species.
I know. And the one thing, you know, talking to you and then Allison, when we did the rhino relocation, how you and John went to Zambia, the one thing I learned is when you're worried about like the cost of a trip, just do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you, I mean, don't,
oh, yeah.
you know, don't miss car payments or house payments, but just do it.
Sure.
You know, the memories.
Sure. It is. It really is. Especially and for us, it was nice because it was before we had kids, before we had a house. And so it was easier for us to get away. And I always for me, it was a motto to, after I got done with my undergraduate studies, to just travel for a couple years. I would just make money, wait tables, and then travel. And because I knew I had my degree, so I had that as a backup of like, okay, have that. I'm good to go. I can definitely get a job when I need to. That's a more serious job. But it was really funny. It was hard to convince my very straight as an arrow husband to spend that money. But it was cute. It was very cute. The minute we got off the plane, he was like, "I can already tell this is the best money I've ever spent."
Right. And it makes me think too about this, the Harpy Eagle. Maybe we should message Suzanne Smith, who did the Amazon River Dolphin.
Yes.
A great interview that you did with her. And I know she said on her excursions in the Amazon, they had, I think she said like an 8-year-old from Germany or something like that, if I remember right. So she did, because you asked her, could I bring my kids? And she's like, oh yeah, you know.
Yeah. Because now I'm in that phase of life, the good late 30s, wherever I go next, I need to bring my kiddos. And whether we do like a volunteer vacation or something like that. But I want to get them out there and get them showing some of these parts of the world that may not be there when they're older.
I know. Well, New Zealand is in your top one to come. So I'll show you some birds here, some kiwis.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Okay. So the harpy eagle prefers lowlands. So less than 1600 feet or 500 meters. I mean, they can be found higher, but they don't really like to hunt or live up there, I guess. And as Angie was saying, with all the really deforestation's the big one, and we'll kind of hammer that a little bit later, but you know, they're classified as near threatened, populations in decline. You know, just reading a lot of stuff on rainforest being cleared for ranching, you know, specifically cattle, the slash and burn of going in and cutting down the forest, burning the stumps, which again is dumping tons of carbon in the atmosphere. So that's helping global warming or hurting really the climate. And then, you know, producing soybeans, cattle feed, other things. So we'll kind of talk about that towards the end. You know, just tough stuff. Now, really quick, their history, their evolution. The scientific name is Harpia harpyja. So I think, I know, I practice.
Easy one.
I practice now. I like sit there and practice.
In the mirror.
Yeah, I did. I'm not kidding. This morning, I was like reading this over and over. Now, they belong to the family Accipitridae. So, yeah, I got that.
I have no, that just blew past me. I don't even know that, speaking a different language.
Accipitridae is hawks, eagles, kites, harriers, and old world vultures. So that's the family. You know, looking at bird evolution, again, very exciting stuff. Like, it just, I get, you know, like, that's my nerdy moment. Looking at
because
the history
they're
of an
flying,
animal.
Yeah, they're basically remnants of, like, flying dinosaurs, right? I mean.
Yeah. They're just, it's amazing. So some of the stuff I was reading on harpy eagles and eagles in general, that a lot of these eagles kind of evolved on islands.
Oh, interesting.
So they didn't have a lot of, so they didn't have a lot of competition. Right, so they were kind of isolated a little bit, not a lot of competition from other predators, so that allowed them to get bigger, and they were able to specialize. So yeah, it was interesting to read some of that stuff. Now, the oldest known bird, we covered that in the condor episode. So they found a bird-like animal that it was about 130 million years ago. So they have found the fossil with feathers, the ancient dinosaur, right, type bird.
Yes.
That was a long time ago, right? Now, harpy eagles specifically, their two nearest relatives is in Papua New Guinea, or the Papuan eagle.
Okay.
So really, other side of Earth.
Yeah, you know, that's pretty far away. That's about as far as it can get.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of interesting, that the genetic studies that they've done. They are one of the closest. And then the crested eagle, which is a much smaller eagle found in Central and South America.
Okay, so they have not closely related to our bald eagle here.
No, they're kind of, I mean, they are in the genetic study I looked at, they are in there. Just these were the two closest relatives.
Cool, okay.
Yeah. Now, da-da-da roll. Dr. Angie, I'm going to test your knowledge.
Oh, man. I'm still in recovery mode.
Yeah, the softball questions I gave you.
I know.
Yeah. What's a horse called? A horse?
No. In Spanish, caballo.
Yeah. Yeah, your analytical chemistry. I'm surprised. I'm not surprised that you were very, very good speaker. But do you know of the largest raptor ever in history? Have you ever heard of it? No, you haven't.
I'm thinking.
Stump the chump.
A raptor. I could do bird maybe, but as far as specifically a raptor, no, I don't.
Yeah. Okay. So the Haas eagle.
Okay.
Was 40% larger than the harpy eagle.
Holy macaroni. Okay.
Yeah. The wingspan of 10 feet.
Wow.
Okay. So again, I think kind of like you were saying, the harpy eagle's wingspan is big. It's huge.
It is big, yeah.
But still a little bit smaller than, say, a condor because they're zipping or long.
Mm-hmm.
The Haas eagle weighed twice that of a harpy eagle, so almost 31 pounds or 41 kilograms. Now, here's my big question. Where, Angie? Where were the Haas eagle?
Well, on an island to get that big. New Zealand.
Oh my God, yay! You're so smart, see?
Yeah.
Dr. Yes. Angie.
What? Dr. Angie in the house. Yeah.
Yes. Dr. Angie.
And just so, he did not tell me that, guys. I could just tell by the I could just tell by the tone. And you're all in New Zealand lately since you live there. So I could sniff out your New Zealand pride coming through, you know.
Okay. Yeah, I've learned to be a Kiwi. So they fed on a lot of flightless birds, and there was a bird called a moa here, and it was like an emu.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, right.
Yeah. So they were, that was their prey, and they're big. Like the moa are big, like emus are big, you know, not as big as an ostrich, but pretty big. Yeah. Now, they went extinct about 700 years ago because when humans or the Maori showed up, they're the native New Zealanders. When they showed up, they quickly went extinct because competition with men.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah. So good old humans, you know, and, you know, 700 years ago.
Good old humans. Yeah. Yikes. Yeah. Well, Chris, Dr. Chris, I have one for you.
Oh, no.
put you on the spot. And I will already give you a clue. The answer is not New Zealand or the United States.
Oh,
so
come on.
That's your clue.
Google real quick.
No Google. You gotta look as silly as me on here.
Okay.
In pop culture, can you think of a bird in a movie that reminds you of a harpy eagle? And my hint is the movie is most appropriate probably for like Rourke, because Rourke's what, 7, 8?
Yeah, yes, so just turned seven.
So for that age and then older.
Oh, I don't know why, but Falco from The Never Ending Story comes up. That's not a bird. That's a dog, right?
That's like a flying dog or something. Yeah. No. How about, it's a series. There's lots of them and there's a wizard.
Oh, okay. Oh, the Harry Potter thing, huh?
Yep, the bird.
Yeah, the Rising Phoenix. Phoenix, because we were talking about Phoenix, right?
Yes, yeah. Fox. Dumbledore's Phoenix was actually... was inspired by the Harpy Eagle. Some of the looks.
Yeah. They're charismatic, right? They're just... Mm-hmm. They're charismatic.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and the just... and the movements and all of that, and the colors. So, I thought that was a really fun fact that I learned. So
So not Falco, right? Or it was Falco, right?
No, yeah,
the Never Ending Story, the blind dog.
Yeah. Now, have you started
really dating ourselves?
I know, right? Yeah.
Birds are just all in pop culture, and it's interesting, Angie. You know, like you said, living here in New Zealand, you know, we're in such a crisis with our native species, and the government's working really hard to eradicate invasive species, and they've actually established sanctuaries on islands around New Zealand, and some of the birds there are being rehabilitated and released there. And they just the big things, rats and stoats and weasels that are really devastating.
Sorry to interrupt, but this might be a This might not be a Dr. Angie question, but what is it? what is a stoat?
It must have been.
Oh.
Come on.
Oh, okay. Okay. I told you I'm tired. But I think
what species are we covering? it's a mustelid, yes.
Okay,
The black-footed ferret.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I didn't know if you're using some New Zealand slang or something.
No. So they were introduced to New Zealand.
Okay.
So these invasive species. But yeah, so with the harpy eagle, like, why care? It's, you know, I know why birds are important here, but in the Amazon, like, who cares?
Oh, you mean why care about them besides that they are, were in spot, awesome. help inspire characters from the movies of Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the biggest reasons to care about them, besides they're amazing to look at, they're just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful birds of prey, but they're an apex predator in the rainforest. So they help keep a lot of populations in check. So for example, one of the harpy prey animals is going to be a capuchin monkey. Mm-hmm. And if the harpy wasn't there to prey on the capuchin monkey, capuchin monkeys prey then on bird eggs often. And a lot of these bird eggs are from more endangered species of birds. So, you know, tens of thousands of years doing this. And so if they're gone, who's going to do it? And then what happens when it's not done? So.
Right. Yeah. The food webs. I mean, it's just we're finding, instead of, you know, a food tree, I guess, or a hierarchy, I like the idea of a food web where it's so intricate and so complex that everything's interconnected. And it's not just one. You know, you take out a major species like that, it's going to have cascading effects.
Oh, sure.
Up and down. Yeah, it's really tragic, you know, on what's happening out there with a little bit.
Well, and speaking of capuchin monkeys being one of their prey animals, what did you come across for some of the additional items that these birds of prey, which they're called because they eat meat, they're carnivores. Right. What else did you find about their nutrition?
Right. So they do eat other animals. It's sloths, which,
That doesn't seem fair.
But again, if, you know, the sloths need to be held in check, right? Other ones. And you said sloths can move pretty quick when they want to, right?
Yes, they can. But I have to interject really quick with my favorite sloth story. When I worked at the zoo, I didn't work directly with sloths, but my good friend Amy did. And one time I went over there to visit and got to feed one of the sloths, and it loved grapes. And so one of my favorite things in life is to feed a sloth a grape. It's similar to feeding a red-footed tortoise a grape because they move so slow that it's like those slow motion videos now you can do on your iPhone with a kid running where they just open, but this is in real time, they open their mouth so slow and like they just take the grape and this whole process takes like, 45 seconds or a minute or something. And then, but you're just mesmerized because they look like they're moving in slow motion and they just close their eyes and slowly chew the grape and like grape euphoria. And it's just, oh man, it's so charming. I love sloths. We'll cover sloths for sure. Maybe I'll get Amy to even do some talks about them. But So when I read that about preying on sloths.
Here comes the harpy eagle swooping out of the trees.
I know.
Bam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Hopefully that
reminds me of your.
Hopefully they don't know what hit it, right? Yeah.
I know. And it made me think of Zootopia. Again, when you're a parent, you watch all these movies. And there's a really funny scene in there, the DMV, and they're all sloths.
Oh, yes.
It's so true.
If you're older than 18, you can relate to that joke. I mean, it's incredible. Yeah.
If any of our listeners work at the DMV, we love you. I can only imagine what you have to put up with.
Well, I think they're coming up with better systems. Actually, my local one here is the fastest one I've ever been to. I think they're devising better a better way to move people, to herd us from one section to another. Because I must admit, I've been in and out of there pretty quickly in the past couple of years. Very, very pleased with that.
No longer sloths.
Yeah.
But okay, so harpy eagles, other than sloths, they some monkeys, like Angie said, capuchins and the others, opossums or possums,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes other birds and reptiles. So they're the apex predator. They are top dog down there. You know, for birds.
But yeah, they'll take down pretty much any medium size or small animals, including reptiles, other birds, rodents, other carnivores. There has been reports of them taking down anteaters, potentially potentially domestic pigs, peccaries, deer.
Right.
And even it was reported in 1990 by a researcher that they saw an attack of a howler monkey, which was estimated to be like 6.5 kilograms in mass itself. So right, yeah. And for those of you that aren't familiar with howler monkeys, are definitely much larger than a capuchin monkey.
And I read, you know, that the females are larger. So that you have that sexual dimorphism, and the females catch larger prey because they're bigger and they can. So the female harpy eagles are the top dogs. I would say women are top dogs here too, but Dr.
Absolutely,
Angie.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Top dog now.
Well, so. you better believe it. No, but it was funny. And it was funny, Chris, too, when I was looking at a lot of the research on harpy eagles. There's not a ton, and we'll get to that in behavior, because they're learning more about them and they're always trying to study them. But they're a little mysterious just because they live so high up in the trees and there's a lot of unknowns. But I came across one paper, and it was studying behavior of like foraging behavior, hunting behavior, prey capture. And the whole paper was pretty much from the Journal of Ornithology from 2011. And it was so cool. It was describing one or two instances of a harpy preying on a monkey. And in this scientific journal, it was describing blow by blow, like, I don't know, a Stephen King, or I don't read thriller or scary novels,
because
I couldn't sleep at night. But it's like really describing it like step by step, blow by blow, where it came from out of nowhere and what the monkey was doing and then what happened to the monkey and the vocalizations the monkey was making once he was struck. And it was just really, it was really intense, but I was just like, God, I love science, because this got published because there's so little known about them that they wanted this historic documentation of how basically the eagle primate interactions in Central America.
But yeah, I mean, you look at their hunting strategy. Their vision's really incredible. I read that their vision, they can see something as small as like 2.5 centimeters or 1 inch from like 2 football fields away.
Wow. Well, Chris, they, interestingly enough, they have amazing vision during the day, but at night it's not so good, which makes sense because they hunt during the day. They are not nocturnal. Right. So they're more, and they're like us, like they need their good eyes, their eagle eyes during the day, but they don't need them at night.
Right. Yeah. And they're really fast. Like you were saying, they fly up to 50 miles per hour or 80 kilometers per hour.
Yikes.
Yeah. They're really crazy. So a little bit about their life cycles. They live up to 25 to 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about the females are larger, body length's about 40 inches or 100 centimeters, and then they have that 7-foot wingspan. Angie talked about their weights. You know, they're pretty heavy, 16 to 20 pounds, you know, which is a huge turkey.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, I looked up, male and females are called eagles.
Okay.
Guess on the babies, what do you think the babies are called?
Eaglets?
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, I didn't see that. I got fledglings, but yeah, eaglet sounds right.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw fledglings. Now, a group of eagles is called you should be going to soon in your cap and gown.
Ceremony?
Yeah, no, convocation.
A graduation? Convocation? Yeah, a commencement?
Yeah,
commencement. A party?
It's a convocation.
Convocation, yeah. Okay. Wow. Okay.
Convocation of eagles, or an aerie is the other word that people use.
Cool.
Yeah, their bills are incredibly, the hooked bills they use.
You mean
like
beak?
A butcher's, Yeah, beak.
You mean beak?
Bill.
Okay.
Bill beak, yeah. They use it to, it's like a butcher's tool.
That oh, geez. I know.
Yeah, the thing I'm looking at here, I'll put
it's
this.
The circle
this,
of life.
It is. And I have a really cool graphic that I'm definitely going to put in the show notes. But on there it says, you know, they use it like a butcher. They sever the victim's spinal cord for a quick kill, which is good. So hopefully it's fast. Mm-hmm. And they strip the meat from the bone. Now, this was cool. Those feathers that we talked about at the beginning, right? Those headdress.
The headdress
feathers,
ones.
The crest. That helps them focus sound into their ears.
So cool.
Yeah,
see,
so
it's
it
all
does
about
have a purpose.
Form and function. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
It actually has a purpose.
Yeah, and they have really good hearing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, really good hearing. And, you know, their wings are really powerful. So imagine, you know, picking up prey so they can do that. And then, Angie, one thing I was asking, okay, I asked myself, you know, why do birds molt? Right? Why do they lose their feathers?
All I know is I like when they molt, when I can, my boys and I, we always like to collect feathers. So, but that's a really good question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like why do they replace them or fall out? And, you know, why does it?
Well, I know when the juveniles are growing up, they'll change colors. So I just always assumed that was to give them the plumage that they needed when they were adults.
It does.
But there's other reasons.
Yeah, so as they get bigger, you know, they need bigger feathers for flight and stuff like that. So birds molt because they do get damaged. The feathers get damaged, and the keratin, which is the same thing in pangolin scales, the same thing in rhino horn, you know, so we can collect chicken feathers. We don't need to go get harpy eagle feathers and grind them up and send them overseas and say, here's your medicine, because it's nothing but your fingernails. Anyways. So the keratin gets weak, the feathers get damaged, and so there's no mechanism to, for that feather to repair itself. So they have to grow new ones to replace them.
Ah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Now, the molting process in ducks is like 2 weeks. In other birds, like parrots, it can take a few years.
Okay, and when you say molting process, are they replacing every single feather on their body?
Almost all of them, yeah. Almost all their feathers.
Okay,
so
cool.
They do molt at different stages, like you said. So the hatchling, the juveniles, getting that first, second, and third plumage. Mm-hmm. But once adults, they replace them about once a year.
Okay.
Now, the molting process is really interesting. So the first thing is they molt symmetrically, right? Which makes sense.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. It would make sense for all of the feathers on the left wing to fall off because then they couldn't fly.
No,
right?
They couldn't fly. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So they lose a couple on the left, they lose a couple on the right. And it's really interesting how that happens. So as the feather ages, the quill gets a little bit loose. And as that happens,
that's the bottom part.
Right.
The quill's the bottom part.
In, mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And the new feather starts to grow. And then so that older feather will fall out. You really got me thinking about how these animals live, you know, these birds, and especially that Hunt graphic novel that you're going to, yeah.
I'll send you the paper. It was like, entertaining.
I do want to read it.
It was entertaining.
I still go back to the black-footed ferret. Like, that is a horror story. Tap it on the shoulder so you roll over and then bite your neck as you wake up.
Well, it's actually a little kind of the black-footed ferret because I think the tap, it makes them roll over so they can bite the appropriate part of the neck to make
know,
it quick.
But still, but you open your eyes and that's the last thing you see. Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, and the black-footed ferret, it's so cute. It looks like it has a little mask, a mask on its face, like a superhero mask. So yeah, you wake up to this bandit and then that's it. So
yeah.
And they're, but anyways, with their behavior, there's still not a ton known about how they live or what they do in the wild. People are studying it, but because they live in such dense forests and so high up in the trees, it can be hard to understand everything about them. But one thing we do know is that these eagles build huge nests, of course, right? And that makes sense. And they use fresh or greener twigs and sticks. Yeah, and researchers are hypothesized that that's interestingly enough to help fumigate the nest against insects and parasites, and it keeps it cooler for the young.
Yeah,
which is so super genius, right?
Now I have to ask you: do they build bunk beds like orangutans?
No. Okay. But I counter with, can you guess how big a harpy eagle's nest is?
Oh, geez. I have seen bald eagle nests, and the one that comes to mind, if anybody ever visits Florida, go to Kennedy Space Center. It is incredible to visit. And they have a pair of eagles that have been there forever that have this huge nest that is like the size of, I don't know, dinner table. So okay. Harpy eagle, but still this fresh. And so they build it every season. I don't know. If I had to guess, Angie, a truck tire size, I don't know.
bigger there. It's
monster truck size.
Yeah, there you go.
Are you kidding me?
You would know more about monster trucks than me. It's 6.5 feet in diameter, so like 7 feet in diameter.
Don't lie. I know you. You got.
I was a good old country girl. I've been in a few trucks in my lifetime. Let's put it that way. We'll end right there.
I didn't catch that one. Let's back up the bus.
Mud running. You know.
Okay.
That kind
of stuff. Okay. Go ahead. No, that's crazy. But, 7 feet. Jeez.
Mm-hmm, but the really thing, this is what really struck me is the depth is 1 meter or 3 feet.
Wow.
So that's like deep. A little human. That's my son walking around. I mean, that's it's deep. That's deep.
That is.
So,
Oh my God. Yeah.
And since we're speaking of nests, the harpy eagles are usually found in pairs that they form monogamously and that they mate for life, similar to bald eagles.
Yeah.
And researchers think that this nest building ritual that they do where they'll each partake in bringing branches to the nest to freshen it up each season. I don't think they always build a new one each season. A lot of times they just will freshen it up right before breeding. But they'll chirp to each other, and they think that this activity helps preserve the bond. It's like a ritual, like, oh, we're cleaning this house together, and then because we're going to have another baby or another,
And it's crazy. And this stuff's so cool because Eagle Cam is like is one of the most watched online web cameras in the world. Is people
Heck yeah,
watching
yeah.
these eagles? Now they're bald eagles, but
who
still
wouldn't?
Yeah,
right. And so, when I was looking at it, I love courtship behavior and talking about this. But interestingly enough, at least with a harpy eagle, there's not a ton known about their courtship behavior. They'll do some what's called like beak kisses, which are cute, where they rub beaks together a little bit. And the harpy eagles are monogamous for life, but they only breed, Chris, once every 2 to 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it's not a yearly thing.
Not even close. No.
Oh.
And Chris, you'll be happy to know that the harpy eagle is definitely not a deadbeat dad by any stretch of the imagination.
No, we don't exist. Deadbeat dad.
Yes,
this week, it's me and my two boys while my wife's at a conference down near Wellington.
I know. Kudos to you all week long. You're doing it, man. And you're surviving.
I'm a harpy eagle dad. Yeah, barely.
Okay,
barely.
Quick question. What'd y'all eat for dinner last night?
Hey, okay. So I am the chef. I will admit, I am... since we've been here, I cook every night. So it's not just, and it's been good. Like there's been some really good recipes that
awesome.
I've been finding online.
Oh, you have to send them to me.
Last night, by request, was pizza. So.
Okay. Well,
by the 3-year-old.
Okay. Fair enough. But no, of course you're an amazing father and you have amazing kids. Yes. And so they'll lay 1 to 2 eggs, but usually only one is viable. And both parents will incubate them for 56 days. The female does lay on the eggs a little bit more while the male will do some hunting. Mm-hmm. And the juveniles stay with the parents at least until 10 months. But I was cracking up because I read the fact that the juveniles don't reach maturity until 5 to 6 years old. But they'll also return back to their parents to beg sometimes.
Yeah.
So it just got
never ending for
I know. My poor mom, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But really, it's really important for their conservation story that they do with the 2 to 3 years between reproductive attempts. They have one of the longest breeding periods of any raptor. And then Chris, on top of that, then they don't reach sexual maturity until they're 4 to 5 years. So the turnover is really slow.
Yeah, that's what, you know, maybe there's a, I mean, obviously there probably is, you know, a link, but, you know, we talked about like just last week, whale sharks and their long intervals.
Yeah.
And so all these species in crisis, the ones that are just hard to replace.
Yeah. And it's amazing. I mean, they're putting a lot of energy into their chicks and fledglings and juveniles, which is probably teaching them how to hunt and, which is really critical. But because of that, if a young one gets lost, it's very hard to make another. It takes a long time to make another one. So they just don't have the turnover. And I think that's why researchers are really starting to focus on them too. Like they want to catch it before it's too late. And you have mentioned that they're near threatened. They estimate the IUCN, which is the International Union of Conservation Nature, says that estimates that there are less than 50,000 individuals.
I know.
And
it makes me think of, it's hard, like I thinking of spatial awareness, right? So I've been to quite a few, obviously, football games and sports stadiums. So when I think of 50,000, you know, at UF, at the University of Florida football game, you'd have 80, 90,000. So you cut that in half, that crowd in half or half the stadium. That's the entire population of a species, right?
Well, let alone one that covers Central and South America, which is a huge, huge continent. And so, and then the populations get fragmented, and it's hard for them to find each other if the forest is cut down in between them.
Right.
So, and honestly, several populations are listed as endangered because there's just so few individuals.
Yeah. And I was reading in the Amazon rainforest that the harpy eagle populations have decreased up to 45%.
Yeah. Oh yes, definitely. And so, but researchers are looking into this and a lot of international groups. And of course the countries, the countries that these beautiful birds live in, but they think that one of the biggest problem, of course, is that being an apex predator, they're very sensitive to human disturbances, including, And they're also one of the first species to disappear when people colonize or start building in the area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like the Haast eagle here from New Zealand.
Exactly like that. And so there's the logging, deforestation, and so it's hard to figure out like what exactly is a good number to keep these guys going.
Not only the other pressure, but, you know, talking about the deforestation, and we've briefly talked about some of this. Right now, the rainforest around Earth, you know, we'll focus on the Amazon, but around the planet, every minute, we lose about 20 football fields worth of rainforest. Every minute.
That's so sad.
So since we've been talking or in this podcast, you know, that's 120 football fields that are gone forever.
And species are wiped out that we haven't even found yet, that we don't even know about.
Yeah.
But not only animals, plants. Yeah. I mean, the plant to cure cancer could be wiped out before we even find it.
And I said 120. That was wrong. It's 1,200 football fields.
Oh,
in the podcast.
I didn't want to hear that.
Yeah, I
didn't like that update.
I know. So it's really the Amazon is just getting just annihilated. So right now we're losing about 18.7 million acres of forest per year. The overall carbon emissions, about 15% per year, is from deforestation. And the Amazon specifically in the last 30 years. So about, you were just a little toddler when this stat was coming out, but they've lost about 20% of the size of Texas.
Gone in
the Amazon. Yeah. And most of this is for cattle ranching. 70% of that's for cattle ranching or growing soybeans. And now the big thing in Brazil is sugarcane, that the Brazilian government has kind of capped it or banned it from like new fields being planted. But there's discussions right now of lifting those regulations so they can develop sugarcane for biofuels.
Yeah.
So again, we can't win, right?
No. So yeah, it's still a tough fight, right?
It is. And you know, we always talk about voting with our dollar, and my conservation tip of the week, and I've been wanting to talk about this one for a while because it has a huge effect on the rainforest. And wherever you are, you know, if you can reduce your meat consumption, you can have an impact. It's one of the things, I mean, I love steak. I love, you know, getting 12 ounce steak.
hopefully like that, sharing just, it. That's a lot of meat.
It is. Back in my football, when I played football, I could put away a 12 ounce steak, no problem. But I love ribeyes. I love, you know, bacon is wonderful. But, you know, I really a couple years ago started reducing meat consumption. I mean, not just for health reasons and stuff like that, but I was just eating too much protein. You know,
sure,
just,
you don't need that much protein. And now right. with the handy dandy internet, for instance, I wanted to go meatless tonight. I try to do it a few mm-hmm. times a week with my family. Mm-hmm. There's so many easy, flavorful recipes that you can just find mm-hmm. online. And it's honestly right. cheaper if you don't buy a lot of meat. So,
right.
There's not too many excuses to not, and I, of course I eat meat. You don't need 12 ounces of steak.
No. It's funny. It's my rule of thumb is to eat protein. You know, if I eat any steaks or anything like that, is about the size of my palm of mm-hmm. my hand. And I have kind of big hands.
Or a deck of cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe but you should go. Actually, you should go with a deck of cards, Chris.
Yeah, a deck of cards. But I went in the USDA, and I'll put this link on the show notes. They actually have a good calculator on how many grams of protein you need per day based on weight. So one of the things is you can multiply 0.36 by your weight to get how many grams you need. And for me, I weigh about 235, roughly about that. So I need about 0.2 pounds of protein per day, or only 3.2 ounces. So
that's not much at all. That's your deck of cards. That's your deck of cards.
I know. It's tiny. And it doesn't have to all be animal protein. You know, there's also dairy protein.
Of course.
I love cheese, you know.
I eat a lot of yogurt every morning. Mm-hmm. Beans.
And your
big fan.
Your favorite, your dissertation, your phytoestrogen source, your soybeans.
Tons of wonderful soy and soy products out there. Mm-hmm.
Right. So you're right. We just need to eat a more well-rounded diet, more legumes, veggies, and fruits. But that is a good way to vote with your dollar. And that kind of leads into when you save money, mm-hmm. not buying less meat, you can give it to organizations like...
Yay! My favorite time. Well, my number one organization this week is the Peregrine Fund. And they do amazing work for birds of prey. Yep. Yes. I'm in love, and we'll be interviewing some of their researchers to hopefully get that out to the public so you can hear about this group. The Peregrine Fund does amazing amounts of evidence-based scientific research on several populations of birds of prey to mm-hmm. utilize science, which is my favorite, right? Utilize science to actually fight the good fight for these birds in the most accurate way possible, because you don't want to throw good money after bad. You don't want to throw a whole bunch of money and say, mm-hmm. oh, do this and that'll help them. You need research to actually figure out how the animals behave and how they're moving and how they're nesting. And then you can use money smart and land smart and try to figure out all these complex issues that are way beyond me, because I'm not a conservation mm-hmm. biologist by trade. So the Peregrine Fund does that. And check out their website. It's www.peregrinefund.org. And that's PEREGRINEfund.org. And Chris will put it on the show notes. But regarding the harpy eagle, they have many programs to combine environmental education for locals and increase involvement, right? So they get the local communities involved in basic research and testing different hypotheses about their ecology and getting the locals excited about why they should conserve this animal. Their website's beautiful too. If you want to just look at beautiful pictures of birds of prey all day long and be stunned, yeah. you can check them out.
Yeah, they're really great. They're mm-hmm. really great.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and they're on Facebook as well too. So if you like them, then you can follow their updates, which is always really brings a smile to my face each morning when I'm scrolling through my newsfeed. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then second, Chris, I went a little bit differently since you and I have a lot in this podcast today have been talking about deforestation and fragmentation. So you can check out the World Land Trust at www.worldlandtrust.org. This organization works to protect some of the world's most biodiverse and threatened habitat, acre by acre.
Wow.
So what they do is they work with local NGOs to help provide finance and technical support to create and protect nature reserves. And they'll also restore degraded habitats to ensure that they're permanently protected. So they do all of this through local partners, which is key, right? So they don't have like, it's not like you or I go buy a chunk of land in Brazil and say like, oh, you can't do anything. Once the land has been acquired by the locals are trained to help preserve the land and how to do things like plant trees and to assist in natural regeneration. So a cool thing too, if you check out their website or if you check them out on Facebook, you can buy a tree or gift a tree to different areas of land. And they're really big too on training the locals and working with education to reduce emissions, like you talked about, from deforestation and degradation. They also have something called the Carbon Balance Program, which helps to reduce emissions and ward off climate change. And this group, of course, is partnered with Harpy Eagle Conservation Groups, and everybody's kind of talking. And in this day and age, that's what we need. We need lots of different players that not too many cooks in the kitchen, but just we need different groups coming at different angles and brilliant minds getting together and saying, hey, let's do this. And, or this is what's worked and let's use science to figure this out. And let's use law and the government. And so and then there's people like you and I, they're like, hey, let's get everybody excited about this.
Bravo to them. That's a cool one. I'm glad you found that. That is, it is complex. And again, it astounds me the amount of effort that around the world that some people are just doing some amazing work out there.
Yeah. World Land Trust, guys, check them out. Their website is pretty, pretty impressive too.
Okay. So from the beginning, we promised how powerful their talons are, their grip. So strong as a Rottweiler.
Oh, like, my.
Wow. Wow. Oh, very powerful. Yeah, very powerful. So this week, if you could visit us at Patreon, Angie and I have a couple things cooking up. And thank you, a couple people out there that have started supporting us. That's really awesome. We love you. We love our listeners. Like, it's great. It's great, the interactions on Facebook, Twitter. So, feel free to contact us. We love hearing from you. We're getting to you as fast as we can. It's awesome. Have some people give us some ideas on species that are coming up.
Absolutely.
That are on our radar.
Very exciting.
Yes. But hey, great show. Like, just Dr. Angie. Yeah.
Can you tell? Like, there's a big difference now, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What species are we covering again
today? I'll never live that down.
Which is fair.
All right. That's fair.
Well, thank you for joining us and listen for us. Look for us for next week.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Listen, learn, share. Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.